This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Welcome to the How to Hunt Deer podcast, which is brought to you by Tacticam. This podcast aims to educate those who are interested in becoming deer hunters, brushing up on essential skills, or maybe just adding a few new tactics to the toolkit. Here we cover a variety of topics that are going to help you be more confident and successful in the field while you're hunting deer. Folks, thanks for tuning in with us again this week. We are getting up to the very best time of the year, and the pre-rut, some good activity is right around the corner. So I had my buddy Pierce Nellis on, and we talk about some of the things that have been going on in our neck of the woods. We both got confirmation of a giant buck in our respective hunting areas. Pierce actually, right after we recorded this episode, got a picture of not the same buck that he got that we're talking about in this episode, but got a picture of an even bigger buck walking through at like 1:30 in the afternoon. So guys, it is about that time. Time to Hit the Woods. So in this episode, Pierce and I talk about not only what we have going on coming up for a little bit of a rut hunt. We talk about our favorite pre-rut strategy, kind of what we're going to be doing. Just a good all-around random conversation about rut thoughts. We actually had just recorded an episode for the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast talking with Sam Billhorn about his favorite pre-rut strategies. And so we kind of reflect on that a little bit as well. But then just get into, you know, what we're hoping to be doing this time of year. So it's a great episode. I hope you enjoy. Get ready to share your hunt this season with the Tacticam 6.0 point of view camera. Featuring a built-in 1-inch LCD touchscreen, one-touch operation, weatherproof housing, and mounts to fit any style of hunting, the Tacticam 6.0 is sure to simplify the self-filming process for you and make sure you have high-quality footage to share with family and friends. The 6.0 features up to 8x zoom, new image stabilization technology that takes the shock out of the shot, and lets you capture crystal clear 4K 60 frame per second footage. To learn more or pick up your 6.0 today, head over to Tacticam.com. If you want to create more memories and fill your freezer while you're doing it, the Onyx Hunt app is a must-have tool in your arsenal. With major new aerial imagery updates with historic look-back, high-frequency imagery, and even the ability to order your own custom imagery, the Onyx Hunt app has solidified itself as the leader among mapping systems. Now, this is all on top of the public and private land ownership info, the ability to use this app with no service, and the unmatched reliability that you have come to expect out of the Onyx Hunt app. You can try the Onyx Hunt app for free for 7 days. Just go find them on the app store of your choice, or you can go to onyxmaps.com to learn more. Hunting comfort this season with camo from Huntworth. They make high-quality technical camo at a fraction of the price of other brands. My personal favorites for the early season include the Durham lightweight pants, which are rugged and durable, but also lightweight and breathable with just the right amount of stretch where it counts, and the Gadsden quarter zip hoodie, which is made to be breathable and moisture wicking. To make building out your kit simpler, the Huntworth website now features their new system builder. This tool will help you grab the right camo no matter what season or species you're hunting. To check out their full camo line, head over to huntworthgear.com. Now let's get into this week's show. All right, joining me for this week's episode of the How to Hunt Deer podcast, I've got Mr. Pierce Nellis on the line. Pierce, what's up, buddy?
Not much, man. Getting fired up for deer.
Dude, we've been talking deer for hours at this point. We jumped on the line here, I think, 2.5 hours ago, roughly. Mm-hmm. And for folks who maybe don't know yet, you are now the co-host of the Wisconsin Sportsman podcast.
I am indeed.
You will eventually be taking that over. As mm-hmm. I step away, it just got a little too much to try to keep up with Wisconsin when I'm 15 hours away, you know.
Right.
And while I do, yes, make trips back there every year, and I'll be there in 2 weeks, you know, yeah. Looking forward to that. But at the same time, you know, it's just hard to keep up with what's going on there. I mean, we had to cancel it. We had a trip planned for the summer, had to cancel that. We rescheduled the trip for the fall, thought I'd be up there the first week of October, had to cancel that. You know, one thing or another, family stuff, my family coming in town here where we live now, all that good stuff. So I've just realized more and more, it's just going to be more difficult to keep up with it. So
right.
Brought on
cell
Mr.
cams can only do so much.
Right. Cell cams can only do so much. And, you know, I'm living vicariously through you and I'll be honest with you, man, it's, you know, Wisconsin is really like a sportsman's paradise, mm-hmm. where I lived, where you lived, like. It is the Mecca, right? You got everything there you could want. You got big deer. You got turkeys everywhere. You got trout fishing all over the place. And whatever, anything else you like to do, if you like to pheasant hunt, duck hunt, all that stuff's up there. Yeah. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, man, it was impacting my attitude. Like, I just had a really poor attitude when it comes to thinking about, you know, being back in the South and hunting in Georgia, which, you know, things mm-hmm. can be good here, but it's just not quite like Southern Wisconsin. But anyway, so I will be...
withdrawal.
Well, yeah, man, it was, and every time I had to talk about Wisconsin, it brings me back into this like state of depression of realizing mm-hmm. that I'm not there. So, you know, I'll be stepping away from that podcast. This will allow me to kind of still come up, still do the things that I'm doing, but I don't have to be thinking about it all the time. I'm living right. in one world, and that's just a trip that I'm going to make rather than trying to live in both worlds all mm-hmm. the time. So,
yeah, man.
Yeah, but anyway.
I know how it goes. I was doing the same thing when I was in college down by Chicago, and I didn't. It was kind of like you said when you moved back to Georgia. Like, you didn't realize how much there is to do in the state of Wisconsin until you're somewhere else. And then you're right. Like, what the hell? Get me out of here. I want to go back to Wisconsin. So
right, right. And I think everybody probably thinks that about Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you love the outdoors and you live in Chicago, I'm going to roll the dice and say you probably don't like it. Just.
Dude, I guided a handful of people from the Chicagoland area, and everybody, and even like, you know, just regular, you know, fishing and stuff, you know, for trout and all that in the Driftless region. We get so many Illinois plates up there at Bridges. Like, there's so many people who know, like, God, I would love to live up here and, you know, take advantage of this resource. And, you know, it's a lot of, you know, very wealthy, retired or semi-retired Chicago professionals who make the trip up there. But I mean, I know a guy who's, he's not retired, but he's doing well for himself. But I mean, that dude, he literally drives up with his wife in their Airstream every single weekend from like April through the last week of trout season. And he comes up and they camp at the same campground. They've just got a standing reservation and they camp the Airstream. He does his fishing and, you know, whatever he wants all day. His wife sits in the Airstream or comes with him and, you know, paints or reads books or whatever it may be. And like the two of them just have it made, but it's like every single weekend he's got to drive all the way back to Chicago. And like, having done that for years in college, I'm like, that wears on you, man.
Yeah. That's a lot. I, you know, as I think about it, like, I don't know, I keep daydreaming that there's this time that will come that I can come back and, I won't say that I miss like all the snow shoveling. Like, once deer season ends, that time period between deer season and turkey season in Wisconsin, I'm kind of just like, meh, whatever. I never really got into ice fishing. Yeah. I never really got into ice fishing or anything like that. So that wasn't really my thing, but dude, if I could come up there and live for like, you know, spring, summer and fall and then head back south for the winter, that'd be pretty sweet. But man, I'm not here to gripe about living in the South. I actually do really like it. It's got a lot going for it. And I'm covering a lot of that over on the Southern Way Hunting podcast right now. But we are here to talk about, though, the pre-rut. So we are recording this October 18th. This is going to launch on October 19th. And I thought what we would do this week is just talk about our pre-rut strategy. We just had an awesome conversation with Sam Billhorn from Whitetail Partners, Wisconsin. And we were talking all about Sam's pre-rut strategy, how he's setting up his property to take advantage of what deer are doing during the pre-rut, what days he's getting out, what he thinks of weather, and all that good stuff. And that episode is going to be launching on the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast this coming Tuesday. That would be the 24th, correct?
Yep.
All right, so that's going to launch.
You pulled that up before I did.
Yeah, well, I got the phone right here, so I'm so that's going to launch on the 24th. So, guys, if you want to hear that episode, you really should jump over to the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. Check that one out. We've got a lot of stuff that we talk about that's going to be really relevant because there's a big cold front coming through that is super well-timed for guys like Sam who really love to get out there for some pre-rut activity, that 25, 6, 7 range, you know, pre-Halloween. Yeah. I feel like Halloween is kind of the day. Like, you know, that kind of ends pre-rut in my brain. And we get into November 1st where it's like, okay, now the rut is on. I know it doesn't work like that, and we cover that in that episode. It's a bell curve of behavior and movement and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, yeah, so Sam loves a pre-rut. We talk all about it in that episode. If you want to learn more, do go listen to it this coming Tuesday, October 24th. But Pierce, we thought we would talk a bit about our strategy going into things here and maybe some of what we learned. Maybe we won't give all the details of what we picked up from Sam, but we'll talk about it just a little bit. But before we do, though, I feel like we've got big news because both of us in the last 24 hours have received intel of a giant in our respective hunting locations. So what can you tell me about what you've learned in the last 24 hours?
So I yesterday got my first daylight. It was like 8:26 or something like that in the morning. I got my first daylight shots of one of our shooter bucks who's running around our place. Now, I'm still going to be planning to hunt out at, you know, on previous episodes, I've referred to it. We have for the last year or so now of my folks' property is the perfect five. It's a little 5-acre postage stamp, but it's surrounded by, you know, pretty much everything you could want it to be surrounded by. We got a creek down in the bottom of it. We got a nice little ridge line of timber. It's about 120 yards wide going along the, I guess, the southeastern side of it with ag up above that. And then to the north, it dips down through a little hollow that's probably 200 and 250 yards wide. That connects to another big strip of timber. And then kind of between the ag, the timber, and the creek bottom, there's a little sort of a tiered, I guess, meadow, for lack of a better term, kind of just prairie grasses. It was, I'm not sure what exactly it is. It's not pollinators or anything like that. It's just grass pretty much. But I've been in good contact with my neighbor who hunts everything around us, or I guess he doesn't necessarily, but his hunting party does, he and his relatives. But he and I have been in close contact, for, you know, the last month or so, just kind of sharing cameras and, talking about what stuff we're seeing here. And we've got one buck, which was our kind of our target buck last year, who made it through, and he is a freaking stud this year. I unfortunately haven't had him over on, my cameras yet. However, he did kind of, just in this last week, he kind of quit hitting my neighbors. He had a camera on a scrape that was right up on top of this hill on an apple tree. And that seems to have kind of dried up with the last cold front that we had here. And so he's made it. That was across the road from us. So he's come down across the road, across the creek even. And he's about 600 yards north of where I'll be hunting this fall. And it was still at night that he was working another scrape, but he was hitting another one down there, and we got a little bit different angle on him, and his body is absolutely gigantic. He's got a freaking gut on him. And I'm really hoping that either myself or someone in his party can fill their tag with him this year. But we've got another one who's real nice as well. Real, real heavy through the main beams, and he's got some super tall brow tines. And he showed up yesterday at 8:26, like I said. I don't have a camera on the mock scrape that I have up on our little corner. However, the direction he was coming from makes me think that hopefully he just beat the hell out of that thing and then walked in front of my other camera. So, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm excited. Looking at the weather here, I'm, you know, we'll get into weather and all that, but in a little bit. But looking at the weather, I'm feeling pretty good. Yeah. Going into the last couple of weeks of October here.
Yeah, so it was.
How about you,
man? I just want to say first, it was really interesting. We were talking the other day, and you were like, "Hey, you know, that buck hasn't been on my buddy's camera again." And then I think it was the next day that you were like, "Oh, but he found him, and he was down in this area," which was kind of to the north of you. And then it's like a day or two later, boom, he's on your ground. So I think it's pretty interesting this time of year. These bucks are starting to do weird things, you know, and they disappear from us. And if you don't have a good relationship with your neighbor or the other folks that are hunting around you, it can be like, well, what happened to them? It's really interesting to get the picture of this guy. Like, okay, he's just making this weird move. Like he's just out doing his thing, man. Like I doubt he's returning to that guy's property every night to where he's been getting him on camera. You know what I mean?
Like, right. At least not the same area. We have an idea of kind of where he beds, and it's pretty goofy in this real, real thick timber that's on the inside of this bend in the road. That's like it almost, I don't want to say it's like a hairpin turn, but you know, definitely, you know, sub 90 degrees. And it's just kind of this little bit that juts out. It's really, really steep coming off the road. And I mean, growing up out there, I've seen deer out there all the freaking time. And
I see what you're talking about. I'm looking at it. Yeah. I'm looking at it on X right now. I see what you're saying. That it's pretty steep right there.
Yeah.
So you think he's on the end of that? There.
Yep. I think, I don't know if he's on the end of it or if he's further up in it, but he, he'll go from there and he'll jog across the road, kind of to the southwest of that. And then that apple tree scrape is up on the, he was behind one of our neighbor's houses. And then up kind of through some weird, it's just like kind of a thick ish, south facing slope that runs alongside the road, but then they'll go up, they'll eat apples and they'll hang out and they'll hit scrapes and everything up on top of that. And then they'll run back down, they'll cross the road, they'll get water over there. Cause I mean, as the crow flies, it's only 300 yards, if that, to get from, you know, really it's the top to really, I mean, ridgetop to ridgetop, it's probably 400. It's nothing too crazy. And I mean, especially as they start getting into the rut, those bucks are, you know, covering ground like crazy. You know, I think, well, we just talked with Sam, he was saying that he's had in late October, he's had a couple of bucks that have covered, you know, multiple ridge tops on a 40 acre stretch or whatever that were like, you know, they've covered 1,000 yards in an evening before dark. Right.
And right. So, right. Yeah.
You know, for us on that small parcel, it's just really a matter of, okay, they're around. We just need to be in the right place at the right time when they cut through our little corner and yeah. We can make it happen, which they usually do.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I'm looking at this. Does your buddy have a food plot too?
No.
Up on the, okay. It looks like there's a little food plot off that ridge, but
no, so those two fields down in the very bottom there, between the road and the creek, those two fields used to be in crops, and a couple of years ago they've turned them into, or they switched over to CRP. And then this year, I think, I don't know if it was because of the drought or what exactly, but I know there was some sort of, I don't know what you would call it. And it might not even be in CRP anymore. But they did something where they allowed landowners to cut and bale their hay due to the drought. I don't know if that was to kind of let them subsidize, like maybe they could sell the hay then, or how exactly that worked. I didn't get the full details on it, but right now both those bottom fields are cut and full of big round bales. And so
gotcha. Okay.
Might need to get one of those redneck bale imitation blinds. And
There you go.
And be really nice to my neighbor.
Yeah. For sure. Dude, I'm just looking at your perfect five here, man. And I'm like, you know, they're not farming a lot of that. Like they could just give y'all a little bit more of that ridge line and stuff. And
you know,
what would they even like, they wouldn't even notice it.
I'd like to think that, you know, maybe down the road, we're able to, you know, kind of work together on, you know, clearing out some of the honeysuckle and stuff and, you know, maybe doing a couple of controlled burns together. Just because, you know, we've over the last couple of years, we've gotten to be pretty good buddies, especially during deer and turkey season when we're both out and, you know, just sharing with each other what we're seeing. They recently had kind of a transfer of ownership and stuff and a little bit of a restructuring within their family and that property. And so it's, I'm hoping going forward here, we're able to really establish a solid relationship with them and, you know, just work things in as mutually beneficial a way as possible. Even if I'm not hunting on there, just like helping them do things that will, I don't want to say in a selfishly motivated way, but, you know, maybe just draw deer kind of through our little corner or something, or, you know, whatever it may be, but really just, I mean, even that transfer from crops to CRP,
right.
The amount of wildlife we've seen, the turkey population has exploded. His grandfather, he used to own the property. He was a big pheasant advocate. And so he would basically just buy birds and stock them kind of on his own property and stuff. And for a while there, I remember in like middle school hunting out there and walking through on a fence line and stuff like that. And like all of a sudden a couple birds would just explode from like 3 feet from me and just scare the hell out of me and all that. We haven't seen any of that lately, but you know, our deer and turkey populations so far are just exploding.
Right.
I think that's a big part of it. So continuing that kind of land ethic there and just, you know, making it as beneficial of an area as possible for all sorts of wildlife. I'm on board for any of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Well, in the last 24 hours,
such a rant there.
What's that?
I didn't mean to go on such a rant.
Oh, no. No, man, there were follow-up questions in there. I was trying to pull a little bit more out of you. I wanted to go down that road just a little bit, but, my last 24 hours, we've got a buck that you and I are hoping shows back up on a piece of public this year. Yep. And if he does, this is about the time we expect him. I was telling you the other day, last year he showed up for the first time October 20th. I knew where he was early season because of, again, a neighboring property. The guy had information on him. He was running actually early in the season, he was running with the buck that I ended up killing. They split up, but they moved the same direction. They just weren't together anymore, if that makes sense. And this deer was a giant. He was a 3-year-old last year. Very, very big deer. But I get a text from a buddy yesterday up there near where I would expect that deer to be early season before he shifts to where he does, that says, saw a giant at such and such today. Same place I saw him last year. I mean a tank. His tines were as thick as my forearm. So I'm getting pretty fired up. And I'm like, no kidding, to get a look at his antler configuration. Here's a picture of him last year. I'm hoping I can relocate him. And so I just, you know, send them this information. I'm like, notice the split G2, you know, one side's bigger than the other. Like, there's some stuff to, there's some stuff there where you can recognize him, right?
Yeah.
And he says, that's likely him. That's his response. That's likely him. I'm not an expert, but I'd say what I saw was nearly 180 inches of antler.
My God. You got me fired up because tomorrow, hopefully, as you all are listening to this, I will be out there hanging cameras for Josh.
And right.
Man, I would love just to get eyes on him.
Dude.
I'm going to have my bow with me, but I would love to see him. I hope I bump him or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I've got he dropped a pin where he bumped him. So I'm going to send you that as well.
Yeah, I'll need that.
Do you have a standard SD camera anywhere floating around? I should have sent you one of those too.
I've got one. Yeah, it's kind of a piece of crap. But
oh man. Okay. All right. I was wondering if it would be worth getting a standard SD camera up where he bumped him, or at least up there in that direction. But if nothing else, you can go up there and scout, and you can see if there's, you know, big sign up there. But
right.
So, and then he follows it up. His body weight has to be 250. Maybe more.
Oh, man.
And this guy's lived in Wisconsin his whole life. Like, he knows big deer. He hunts southwestern Wisconsin. He's used to the, you know, the size of the deer. And then it just goes on. He jumped up while I was, I can't say that part because you might figure that out. I was shocked. His antlers were so thick. So, yeah, man. This could be him. I don't know for sure, but with him saying, hey, that with that antler configuration, that could very well be the same deer, or for him to say it was likely him, you know, is real exciting, dude.
Yeah.
It's real good news.
And even if it's not him, knowing that he's out there and the other one's out there too.
Right.
I mean.
Right. So if I'm putting the pieces together, I know that this deer was 3 years old last year, so I know he's going to make a big jump. I know he made it through gun season because someone saw him after gun season. If this is him again, I know he's still on the property and around as a 4-year-old. I would expect a jump anywhere, you know, somewhere around that 180 mark is probably what he would be this year based on how big he was as a 3-year-old. 180, if not even a tick bigger. Would be expected, I think. So, man, putting all those pieces together, it could very well be him. And if it's not him, well, then there's another big one to chase up there. And that's the same area where, you know, this deer was up there last year in this section of the of the public. And but this guy also jumped another big buck up there last year too. And so this is just a good area for this time frame. So I need to get in there and do some scouting or you need to get in there and do some scouting or something where we can figure out like what are the pieces of the puzzle here. Because I think that spot, I think that area might be a little bit overlooked for some very obvious reasons. When we're, you and I are talking about it off air, we know, just an overlooked spot. Like, why would you hunt up there? You know, if you think the spot where I'm hunting looks not real good on the map, like you definitely have no reason to hunt where he jumped that giant yesterday.
Right. Dude. And it's the kind of thing too, where, you know, like we were talking the other day, we were texting about this and I was looking at an Onyx and you hadn't sent me the pins yet. And I'm like, where the hell is this feature he's talking about? What on earth? And then you sent me the pin and you explained it to me. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
So you need to be in there if you're going to ever find that spot. Cause you're right. As it, you know, as you're just looking at Onyx, it looks like absolutely nothing special.
Yeah.
Like it looks like any other, you know, overlooked, whatever, like just, you know, who cares? But then once you factor in that, oh, okay, this is what's there. This is the feature in the landscape that is there. And you start looking around it, you're like, holy smokes, man, this whole area looks like, I mean, knowing that that's there, this whole area makes a hell of a lot more sense now. And I'm stop me if I'm giving away too much. I'm trying to be vague here, but
no, you're good. Well, I just want to say, like, this is a good segue and a good point to make this time of year. Like, if you're bow hunting during the pre-rut time frame, or even, you know, this first, that early rut time frame, sometimes being in a good area is not good enough when you're bow hunting. Well, it's almost never good enough, right? Like, you've got to find that place in there where it really pinches down the movement, or you've got to throw a bunch of sits at it and just hope that it comes together for you. And that's kind of how this area is. Like, it's good, but it's big good. Like, there's a lot of goodness all the way around you. And to really capitalize on it, you've got to find something in there. And last year, I just happened to find that special something between crossing some pressure, other fun things that I just won't say. I hate that I've got to be so dang vague this year. Maybe next year I'll feel a little more comfortable talking about it. But I want to kill one more out of there first.
Was it this podcast or another one that you got the message saying like, hey, I know where you're at?
Oh, that was the Wisconsin Sportsman.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. I literally got a screenshot of where I killed this buck. Like, the guy sent it to me through the county GIS map and was like, hey, I found the spot. Like, cool, dude.
Shut up.
No, it actually turned out really well. So this guy, he and I hunted together.
He killed two, didn't he?
What's that?
He killed two, didn't he?
No, he doesn't hunt a lot out there. This guy actually ended up filming my turkey hunt in Wisconsin this year.
Oh, right.
There was another guy, though, who had been watching my Instagram stuff last year. I pull up to the parking lot. I walk over. I'm like, hey, dude, I'm going this way. Which way are you going? Or I actually ask him first, which way are you going? I'll go the other way. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you look familiar. I just got done watching all your stuff. I'm like, oh, good.
Great.
Good. I'll just point this camera at my face alone from now on then. So anyway, that's all beside the point. Pierce, we're coming up on the pre-rut, man. A lot of folks' favorite time of year, especially, you know, Sam Billhorn. We talked to him earlier. I know a lot of guys who on private ground, the pre-rut is their favorite time of year. That seems to be, I don't know. That seems to be pretty specific to me, though. Like, it seems like guys that have a good piece of private where they kind of know the deer, or maybe a piece of public that they're really, really familiar with, and they maybe have some cameras out and just they know the deer on the property, that pre-rut is really good for a couple of different reasons. And Pierce, I'd say it's probably up there on your list, too. So what is it about the pre-rut that gets you fired up?
You know, man, I've been thinking about it for the last 24 hours or so, just as we were getting ready for our episode with Sam and all that, too. And I've realized there's something like last year. So I've archery hunted for 10 years now. And there's something about, so I have made every mistake in the book, like done every stupid thing that I possibly could have, from, you know, literally hunting without a rangefinder right off the bat and missing what would have without a doubt, even today, been my biggest buck to date. while I was kneeling on the ground, doing stupid stuff like that, overpressuring land, you know, not playing the wind, not understanding thermals, you know, relying on the rut and just hoping that, like, well, it's the rut now. Like, you know, I read Field and Stream, 7 best days of the rut. Let's fire up and get in there. I am kind of, so last year, when I didn't finish that thought, last year I ended up, my goal for the season last year was to finally shoot my first archery buck. I wrestled with a bunch of, you know, stuff in years past. I'm like, he's not big enough, or I shot one that I was really, would have been really happy with, but just hit him high and, you know, things didn't go well. He ended up living through the year, but then I never saw him again. And so I was able to fill my first archery buck tag last year, after a lot of years of passing. And there's something about, and I don't know if it's just because, like, I've conditioned myself to suffer through the entire month of November until gun season and then throw a Hail Mary with that. But there, I wrestle a lot with, like, in the pre-rut, when you're dealing with a lot of predictable buck activity, you know, I wrestle with having almost a little bit of FOMO and being like, well, if I shoot a buck now, then I'm not going to suffer the whole bit of November. I'm not going to have that desperation, right. You know, like, God, it's got to happen. Like, yeah. You know, the gun season's getting here closer every single day. This year, though, we've been talking about how each of us feel very confident going into this deer season,
right?
For better or for worse, with or without any evidence backing that, really.
Yeah, let's be clear. We have no reason to be more confident and feel good this year.
No,
we just do.
No, it's just a gut feeling.
Right.
Exactly. We've got a lot of blind optimism this year, which I'm really enjoying.
I am too.
It's a lot more relaxing feeling I've got going into this season than in years past. But yeah, so I'm wrestling with the fact of, like, you know, killing a buck in the pre-rut and, like, putting, you know, a lot of effort into the pre-rut. It is unbelievably rational. And it makes so much sense because you've got bucks kind of on a routine. They're checking all those scrapes and everything on a, you know, as you get closer and closer and closer to the rut, they're hitting those scrapes. They're laying down sign. They're starting to be more predictable, and then the rut cracks open and then it's just a shit show and right. Everything's kind of chaos. Sam said it perfectly. Like, you know, when it's pre-rut, you can set up on a scrape and you can watch that buck come in, and you know, with almost certainty, at least if you're on private land, say you've got property that's, you know, as meticulously groomed as Sam's is, you know that that buck is going to come in. And he's either gonna, you know, maybe he hits the ground, maybe he hits, you know, the branch there, maybe he just bumps it, but you know, for a second, he's going to hit that. He's going to stop there. Rather than during the rut, maybe you've got a buck hounding a doe, and rather than, you know, playing the game very nicely and, you know, laying down sign, working that scrape, maybe he's on that thing's tail and he's running full bore across the ridge 60 yards from you. So it's less predictable, which in a way I like, but at the same time, I think if you're really jonesing to get after a big buck, and catch one that's, you know, on a routine, pre-rut's a hell of a time to do it.
Right.
Right. So I'm excited for it. I'm like I said, we've been looking at the forecast for the last week here, and things look really, really good. At least in Wisconsin here in Southwest Wisconsin, where I'll be hunting. Things are looking really good a week from, this will come out tomorrow on the 19th. So a week from, today.
Yeah.
Things are looking really good.
We've
got a lot of stable temps, but then that cold front Thursday, Friday, going into Saturday, I think a lot of Bucks are going to die next weekend.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you've got that 26th, 27th time frame of that cold front blowing through, and it's just going to, mm-hmm. I mean, it couldn't happen at a better time.
Like, with a bit of rain, too. Yep. So you can be a little aggressive, let that rinse off, and then go back in there, not worry about scent quite as much.
You know, right, right.
And worry about your wind, but not ground scent so much.
Yeah. And if it's true that, you know, wind and leaves in the scrapes and rain on the scrapes gets bucks up on their feet, freshening those things up because they want to get back in there and start working that sign again. Man, if that's true, this perfect is a perfect storm. It's a perfect recipe, man. It really, really, really is. So I'm excited. I wish I was going to be there for it, man. I really do. I am not going to be in Wisconsin until November 1st.
So, which is still a great time to be in there.
Oh, it's I don't think it's a bad time.
The rut fully starts, at least like where I hunt. I think it's like November 3rd or 4th.
Right.
I think that's when we go, we make the shift from pre-rut to rut. And I mean, obviously it's kind of, you know, give it a day or two and there's some fluctuation in what you're seeing. Cause some of the bucks are in rut mode. Other bucks are still in pre-rut mode, but,
right.
I think after that's when it starts getting chaotic.
Yeah. And I think what I've seen too, from my cameras for the last couple of years, this area where I'm hunting is a little delayed from where you are and delayed from where Sam is.
Yep.
In that I don't see that like running, chasing behavior, until 12th, 13th, 14th, basically that week right up into gun season.
Mm-hmm.
Man, when both times I shot the buck last year, that poor thing, I'm stuck him full of holes. But like both times that I encountered him last year, he looked like he had just gotten up out of bed, you know, yeah. and was coming through to kind of work these this scrape area. So,
and that was in the evening too.
Both times.
Yeah.
Both times were in the evening. Did not see him in the morning. I saw some smaller bucks cruising in the morning, but what I was also seeing the whole time that I was there was does with their fawns still. So yeah. there was no separation of the doe family groups yet. I only saw one buck chasing a doe, and it was a little buck, and the doe had kind of, I don't know if you've ever observed this behavior maybe around the rut, but like when a doe is not ready, at least this has been my thoughts, when a doe is not ready and she's running from that buck, you'll often see her like run, 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 and then she'll stop and squat down and pee, and then she'll like run off again, and that buck will come up and smell it. And I've watched them like smell that spot and then lose interest. So it's like they're like, oh, okay, she's just letting me know she's not quite ready.
Interesting.
So I've seen that in person. I've seen it in Alabama. I've seen it in Wisconsin. I've seen it on my trail cameras before. It's just, yeah, you have a doe run in, she pees, he comes in, sniffs it, he kind of looks up and goes off the other direction where it's like, okay, not yet. Mm-hmm. So I saw that exact thing play out last year where doe runs in, she stops, she pees, she runs off, he comes in, he stops, he smells it, and he's like, eh, okay, and kind of goes on about his business. So... yeah, I don't know where I was going with that.
Is there a pretty high doe density over in the area that you're hunting?
In the area that I'm hunting public in Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Dude, there's so many deer. So I have counted ag fields in the evening out there with 70-plus deer in them.
Jesus.
Now, those are special evenings. Like, right. It's not every night, but there are a lot of does. But there are a lot of bucks, too, man. Like, mm-hmm. the buck, I would say there's a lot of does, so like high doe density, but I would say the buck to doe ratio is not bad, if right. that makes sense. So there's a yeah. lot of, I think last year, if I'm not mistaken, last November, I saw as many bucks as I did does.
No kidding.
And I think that's probably pretty consistent for this spot for me over the last mm-hmm. several years. Early season, it's a little more skewed.
Yeah.
You know, towards, but I'll have early season sits, or I would have early season sits out there where I would go and I'd see, you know, three or four small bucks and a doe and two fawns come out. and that was it, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think the ratio is too skewed. The age structure is pretty decent too. I mean, I sent you some pictures of some other deer that I had on camera last year, and I think it's pretty healthy age structure out there.
Yeah, I would say so.
There's
a lot of good genetics out there too.
Yeah, they're all right.
Heavy horned deer.
Yeah, people should really hunt a lot more around Milwaukee. Mm-hmm.
Those marshes are nasty.
That's what we're talking about for anybody asking. Pierce, let's jump into some pre-rut strategy here, man. We don't have too terribly long left, but like, where's going to be your focus, I guess, over this next week or so as things really start to ramp up, as we've got the cold front coming? What are you doing? Because you're going to be on a mix of public and private.
Hey guys, just want to take a quick minute to let you know that the How to Hunt Deer podcast is brought to you by Tacticam, makers of the best point-of-view cameras on the market for hunters and anglers. They're on the cutting edge making user-friendly cameras to help the everyday outdoorsman share your hunt with friends and loved ones. Their new 6.0 camera has a ton of upgraded features this year, but the one I'm most excited about is the new LCD touchscreen. In my mind, that's a total game changer. And one area Tacticam really shines is with their mounts and adapters that are made with the sportsman in mind. If you've tried to film your hunting and fishing excursions in the past, you know how frustrating it can be to get an action camera aimed just right or get it attached to your weapon or in a good spot for a second angle. Well, Tacticam makes all of that a breeze with their line of accessories. This fall, I'll be using their stabilizer mount on my bow with the 6.0 camera and their bendy clamp paired with the 5.0 wide camera for a second angle and to make sure I don't miss any of the action. To learn more and check out their full line of products, head over to their website, tacticam.com. Share your hunt with Tacticam.
Yep, I'm going to be on a mix of public and private. This coming week, so prior to this episode releasing, as I mentioned, we've got really, really stable temperatures. And so what I'm looking at is going to be a change in wind direction, and I'm going to be watching my cell cam out at the Perfect Five to see if that buck shows up only on a specific wind, because yesterday in the morning we had wind blowing out of the northeast, and so the direction he was coming, he had the wind right in his face. However, that was at 8:26, and at 10 a.m the wind totally flipped, like did a perfect 180, and I mean that was the most buck activity I'd had on our ridge so far this season. So I'm still trying to figure out if that was wind related or if that was just they're starting to get fired up. It's November 17th yesterday, and things are really starting to take off here. So I'm going to be focusing on public. I think until then, there's a marsh that I've got kind of on my radar near me that I'm going to be trying to figure out where there's sort of a pinch point within that, because it kind of separates a really, really steep, hilly bit of public, which is equally good. I saw a lot of sign in there in the early season. I have yet to actually hunt it, though. But I'm going to devote my time towards that and then look for the pinch point between that super hilly terrain and then down in this marsh where then kind of there's a little bit more gradual incline up to an ag field on top that's got beans in it this year. So I'm curious to see just kind of how that plays out in there. I really got to get some boots on the ground. As we were talking, our Wisconsin trout season just ended this past Saturday, and so that's been taking up the majority of my time.
Right.
And just hitting running guide trips and stuff like that. So I'm just now finally starting to be able to fully devote my attention to deer, which I'm pretty happy about. But so I'm thinking that's going to be the key for me, at least, my game plan. However, if that same buck were to show up later today or tomorrow morning, I might start thinking about, okay, they're not as concerned about the wind direction as they are just wanting to lay down signs. So I'm going to make a play off of that and see about trying to get in there.
Yeah. What were those wind directions yesterday?
Yesterday it was blowing when he came by, it was blowing from the northeast, kind of east to northeast, more so east. And then it flipped like an hour and a half later, kind of went north for a little bit and then started blowing, or I guess basically then it switched to a south wind and then a southwest wind, which we get a lot of out on our property. And a lot of times, like, it bodes well for the morning, because it'll actually blow out over the top of kind of this thicker sort of, like, I don't know, meadow kind of prairie sort of thing that's kind of along the ridge top, just downhill from the ag fields over there, where they, a lot of times they'll run through our corner, through the ridge, and then they'll go out through that meadow, kind of weave in between all the, just a couple of apple trees up there, and they'll weave between those and some honeysuckle bushes, and then they'll drop down kind of through the, at the very kind of the mouth of the hollow that we're in, and then they'll cross over there and work their way over to the other ridge top.
Gotcha. So what was that wind doing before he came through?
Same direction. It stayed.
So it was consistent.
Still, yep. Consistent out of the northeast.
Interesting.
And then, yeah, it wasn't until they flipped that then things switched around, which is weird because I've intentionally hunted northeast winds and even east winds that blow directly off that ridge top.
Yep.
And I've had crap luck while sitting there. Like, I'll see maybe like two deer, you know, if that, and a lot of times they're even, they don't even want to go across the ridge top. It's more so they're cutting down on a lower trail and kind of skirting out through the mouth of that hollow and going up to the other side.
Yeah.
So I was honestly surprised to see that buck come through yesterday.
Well, let me ask you this. It was 8:16 in the morning. Sun's up. Mm-hmm. Thermals starting to rise.
Yeah.
Do you think, I guess we don't know, did he follow the ridge line or did he come off that other point that's straight kind of north of where you've got that camera?
I think he followed the ridge line.
You think he followed the ridge line? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious because with a northeast wind, if he followed that ridge line, he could be downwind of any does and be checking any of those bedding areas.
Yeah. Right there. And there's a bedding area directly south of us there as well. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So just
he was in
kind of cruising through.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So, hey, when you're on the public, what's the sign that you're looking for, man? So you're looking for terrain features, obviously, that are going to dictate a lot of that movement. But what's going to be the, I guess, the sign that makes you say, all right, this is the spot. This is where I'm setting up camp.
If I find a heavy trail with a pretty worn out scrape near it or on it, I'll be probably making a set off of that.
Okay.
Otherwise, if I find maybe what looks like a buck bed and I'm starting to see kind of a rub line working to or from or along one of those heavy trails, I might try and set up off of that. But I think right now going into, before we get into November, I'm going to be focusing on scrapes.
Gotcha. So are you trying to shoot the scrape or are you trying to get fancy and do like a lot of guys are like, well, he'll be downwind of it. He won't actually come in and work it. Or
I'm going to try and shoot the scrape. I'm not that good of a hunter.
Dude, I'm the same way, man. Like if I've got a scrape that's like I'm set up near, if there's any way possible to shoot that scrape, I'm going to be on it. I pulled that last year. It would have been a few days before I shot the buck. A few days before I saw him, maybe a day or two before I saw him the first time. I had to get on the ground and I couldn't see the scrape. But I had a deer come in from that direction. And to this day, I don't know what deer that was or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see it. And I was kicking myself. I was like, man, that's the last time. Now, granted, in this spot, I didn't have a choice. But I was like, that's the last time I set up on a scrape and that I can't shoot. Like,
right.
It's too predictable, man. Like, they may not spend a lot of time there, but my goodness, it's there for a reason. It's because that's usually where they walk. Like,
right.
they're not really right. in the business. And I hear guys say this a lot, like, yo, you got to be back off the scrape. And I get it. Deer use their nose a lot. But, like,
I mean, off the scrape enough that you can shoot to it without getting winded. But
right.
I'm still hunting that scrape.
But I think a lot of guys will say, man, you get 50, 60 yards downwind of it because that buck's going to come 30 yards downwind of it. And he's just going to scent check it. And it's like, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But if I'm 25 yards from the scrape and that buck comes in 10 yards downwind of me, I'm just going to, I feel like I've got a better chance of, because I can shoot him at the scrape. And then if he, you know, if he's coming in, then I'm going to make sure I've got a shot that's downwind. So before he can hit my scent stream, I'm going to take a shot, right? Yeah. Rather than saying, oh, I'm going to be 60 or 80 yards downwind of the scrape, and then you watch him walk in 60 yards away and work the scrape and walk off out of your life. Like,
right.
I just can't get down. Can't get down with that. I'd rather shoot that difference in the middle and be able to shoot the scrape and shoot a little bit downwind if I at any way can. But, man, that's going to be that would be my play, too. I, unfortunately, am not going to be getting out a whole lot for the pre-rut. Well, like I said, that early November time frame for where I'm going to be in Wisconsin is very pre-rut-ish.
Mm-hmm. Especially on that property.
Yeah, on that specific place. I mean, I know places around there where guys are like, you know, by November 2nd, I'm seeing, you know, bucks chasing does. I'm seeing deer locked down. And I've seen quite a few deer locked down on this property too, but it's never until like the 15th, 16th, 17th time frame. Mm-hmm. You know, that's usually right before gun season when I see bucks locking down with does in this specific area. But man, any takeaways from the conversation we just had with Sam that you're like, that blew my mind. I'm going to keep that in my pocket for this year.
Oh man. I think when you're the big thing for me that stuck out was when you're dealing with, you know, one thing I'm kicking myself for not asking. I thought of it after we finished recording was how much consistency is he looking for before he decides to make a play? Is it one sighting? Because, you know, over on the Wisconsin Sportsman, we chatted with Ryan Glitzky a couple weeks ago, and you know, we were discussing how you're interpreting trail cam data, and basically if you get a buck on there, you know, a handful of times, whether it's in daylight or at 2 a.m., he's more inclined to make a play off of that. Cause he's saying, you know, regardless, like if he's there at night or during the day, you know, he's in that general area. Like he's showing up on camera. I know that he's nearby. The odds of him making a pass, whether he goes, and on top of it too, like, you know, we discussed trail cams are only part of the picture.
Right. Right.
And we've all had cameras that don't fire when a deer walks by or they've, you know, the deer skirts them or, you know, whatever happens.
They come too close to the camera. They skirt underneath your field of view. They're just too far out. All the things.
Yeah. It's like they know.
Yeah.
But really just looking at, I'm thinking here as we go into this coming cold front, next week, between now and then, I'm watching for, like I said, I'm watching for a change in the wind direction. I think that's going to be critical depending on what your property, lays out best for, where your best stands at. I think really, if you've got cell cams in the area, really watching those close to see what deer are doing with a different wind, as temperatures are stable. I think that's going to be huge. And then, you know, the big one for me too is, you know, with this rain that we got coming a week from now, slipping in there an hour before, that rain is projected to stop, get a little wet, but get in there quiet, take advantage of the wet leaves and a little bit of mud. So you can make a nice quiet entry, and run in there, get set up, be aggressive, hit one of those prime stands and hope that as soon as that rain subsides, that like just bank on those deer being up on their feet, wanting to freshen those scrapes and, you know, just get after it. Sam made another good point too, that, you know, if you've got breaks in the rain, that's a prime time to hunt. And then when the rain picks back up, if you're going to, you know, if it's a couple hours coming, you know, use that time while the deer are pinned down to go in and swap SD cards. If you need to, you know, check cams and stuff like that,
right.
Use this as like your last, I mean, like we said, it's the perfect storm right now, really, coming into next week. You know, use the rain as an opportunity to gather as much intel as you can.
Yeah. Scout if you need to.
Going into November. Yeah.
Scout if you need to. Boots on the ground. I think what I took away from the conversation with Sam, the primary thing was when we pressed him and said, all right, Sam, you can't be on your well-manicured land. You've got to go out. You've got to try your hand on public. And he was like, I'm viewing that as, man, I've got nothing to lose. So I'm going to get out there and find the sign that I need to see, and then I'm going to sit on it. And I was like, man, that's such a good reminder. That was my mentality last fall. It got me on the deer and had me coming home with a buck, man. And so that was, I wanted to share that just for our listeners again, because we can get so timid, I feel like, and just say, okay, we're trying to make sure we don't overpressure this spot or whatever. You know, first of all, it's a rut. You can get away with a ton, right? Mm-hmm. But second of all, what do you have to lose, man? If you bump them,
right.
If they skirt you, if they move, whatever the case may be, keep going. Like, just get out there and get after it. Find the sign that you need to see that says this is the spot that you have to sit. Don't settle for garbage sign. But then again, like last year, I have to bring this up again. The very first decent, and I say decent because it wasn't even that good. It was a faint deer trail that I crossed. And I said, the first deer sign I found, not that impressive, but we're getting closer. That's the trail I ended up killing my buck on. So, also don't be afraid to, you know, but there was a lot more that made it good. I mean, terrain and a lot of other stuff came together to make that a good spot.
Well, right. And if you've got a couple of days too, and you're hunting public and you find that faint trail, I mean, worst comes to worst, you know, obviously we're not all, you know, able to take, you know, multiple consecutive days off and stuff like that. But still, like, if you're going into a spot for the first time and you're looking for sign, I mean, don't be afraid to set up on that and use that as an observation sit.
Right.
And have an idea of, okay, well, this secondary trail probably runs parallel to or intersects a main trail. And we'll be able to figure out, okay, they're still using the secondary trail. It's enough of a trail that it's there, right?
Right.
You know, who knows what's going to come out of that? Because especially if it's less used, the odds of that being, you know, something that a buck might use, because it's, you know, for whatever, maybe the wind swirls, he just knows that the wind swirls well on that trail or whatever it may be. You know, we can kind of tell when there's a doe trail and stuff like that, because it's usually a doe with a couple of fawns and they run the same, you know, food to bed pattern all the time. And as a result, that trail's just worn down and just, I mean, a lot of times it's nice because it looks like a cattle trail and it's easy to find, but you know, finding that secondary trail that intersects it and not being afraid to, you know, make a play off of that. Because worst comes to worst, you learn something, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Like worst case scenario, absolute worst case scenario, you get busted. Okay. Well, that sucks. Not quite worst case scenario, you don't see anything. Okay. Well, tomorrow I'm going to make a play somewhere else anyways. Right.
Right.
So I think, like you said, just being flexible, not getting so locked into, here's where my stand at, here's where the trail is, and, you know, this is how I'm going to fill my tag, you know, make plays off of the sign and be willing to relocate.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Man, I had
go where the deer are.
Yeah. Yeah. Go. Yeah. It's just like Dan Johnson's shed hunting strategy. Go to places where deer live and climb up in a tree and sit there and wait for them to come by and see what happens. One other thing that I was going to just touch on, because you kind of hit it there. Not everybody can take a concentration of time off this time of year. I get that. But you should really try. Like, the odds are so much higher for you at this time of year. If you just take a long weekend, just take Friday and Monday off and then hunt Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Scout all day Friday. Scout Thursday afternoon into Friday. Scout Friday, Saturday, you know, and then hunt Sunday, Monday. Like, do what you have to do to concentrate your time, because this is the best time of year. It's go time now.
Right.
Like, as of next weekend, that weather front is going to push through. It is the time to be in the woods. It may be the best hunting weekend of the entire season.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say. Other than if you're a gun hunter and you're like, you know, I've got the spot for gun season. Like, yeah, I get that. Okay. Your odds of success may be higher, but like, this may be the highest odds weekend coming up. So get out there in the woods, find the sign you need to see, climb up in a tree. Don't be afraid to, make moves if you have to, go where the deer are. Call in sick, use some sick days, man. Do what you got to do, but get out in the woods.
And even if you can't do that, like say you can't even get away for, you know, 3 or 4 full days in a row, if you can find a way to work it with, you know, your job or anything where you can squeeze in consecutive morning sits or maybe an afternoon and a morning. So you kind of know, okay, this is where they went last night and here's where I'm going to set up this morning based off of that. Just so you can kind of get that real time intel, get eyes on deer, have a really good sense of what's going on in the woods. I mean, I mean, it's cliche, but time in the woods, you know, kills deer, right?
Yeah, like, it does,
can't
man.
Kill them if you're not out there.
And it's, I'm learning more and more. It's sequential time in the woods that seems to kill a lot of deer too. Like it doesn't matter if I'm out this Friday or this Saturday and, you know, maybe I've hunted every Saturday of the season. Okay, great. You hunted 15 days, 16 days. Okay. That's awesome. But you had very little actionable intel.
Yeah.
But like if you hunt 3 or 4 mornings in a row, well, boy, you just learned a lot about what the deer are doing right now. And you can change based on that rather than changing on what you learned a week ago that is now irrelevant, you know?
Absolutely.
And I mean, if your job is flexible, so many more jobs are flexible now after COVID. Like, man, last year I slept for like 4 hours a night. You know, I hunted from dark to dark every single day and worked at night. Got back at 8, 9 o'clock at night, worked till 12 or 1 in the morning, and did the whole thing again. Not doing that this year.
I don't know how you did that last year, man.
But do you remember, like, there were points in time where you and I talked, and I was like a zombie. I think I remember trying to record a podcast episode, and I was like, dude, I don't even know if I can do this. Like, I can't carry on a conversation at that point, you know, much less try to ask questions that people care about the answers to.
Absolutely. So, well, and I think too, it's like, you know, it's a grind, right? Especially when you're juggling work and family and you're trying to squeeze out time in the woods and stuff like that. It is a grind. It wears on you. There's definitely something to be said for if you are making yourself miserable because you're trying so hard to get everything done and you were like, you get out in the woods and maybe you are kind of a zombie or whatever. Like, well, you're not going to hunt your best at that point as well. You know, something you know, like, I can't remember if it was deer season or turkey season where you were like, I'm sleeping in.
Oh, that was last year during the rut. There was a day that I was like, it was the morning after I shot the buck. I took a reset. Yeah. I slept in. Like, it's the way it's got to be, man.
And don't be afraid to take the coffee reset.
Dude,
as well.
The coffee reset. Holy cow. How did we not cover the coffee reset yet? I mean, that is so important for folks. Coffee reset, beer reset, friend reset.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, like, go do whatever your thing is. Like, my thing last year was like, I slept in, I had a good breakfast, like fast food breakfast, like good as in delicious and filling and not a milkshake coming out of a blender bottle in a tree stand, you know, because that's what I was living off of last year was shakes and protein bars and good conversation with Pierce. And then I went and shot my bow and I was ready. That was it.
Dude, and then, shooting the archery block during the rut, that is something that is so underrated.
Right.
Because it just keeps you sharp. And grant, like, you and I have struggled with target panic and stuff like that for the last couple of years. But, like, just knowing, like, yep, still shooting good. This is great. I don't have a single second guess in my mind now. Like, I know I'm hitting true. And when that deer comes out, like, even if it's been, you know, 24 hours, you still, like, almost mentally, you feel, like, warmed up still.
Right.
And, dude, it's critical.
Yeah, nothing worse than seeing that deer and realizing, like, I haven't pulled this bow back in 3 weeks.
Yeah, dude, right? That's a bad feeling.
Real bad. So, all right, Pierce, man, I'm going to let folks go. When they're listening to this, they need to go start making their plans. They need to call their boss, take a day or two off. They need to tell the wife they're going to be out in the woods. They need to get their gear ready, shoot their bow, and get ready to deer hunt because the best time is upon us. So,
dude, as we were talking there about getting your butt in the woods and, you know, you can't kill them from the couch, whatever, I heard, like, in the back of my mind, like, all of the Whitetail Habitat Solutions videos that I used to watch and stuff like that, like Jeff Sturgis just saying, yeah, like saying you can't kill him from the couch is the worst bit of advice ever. Like, well, I mean, within reason of like wind, yeah, but at the same time, from an intel gathering spot, I don't know, man.
Man,
granted, he's got, you know, similar kind of deal with you know, groomed public and or groomed private. I'm sorry, and you know, a managed property and stuff. But like, if you're a public land hunter, man, freaking get after it. And if you're a private land hunter, get a saddle and get after it.
Right.
Because you can jump on the other side of the. That's something that I like, dude. I feel so much more lethal on that 5 acre chunk now that I've got a saddle and I'm not relying on, you know, a ladder stand or whatever it may be. And I get that, you know, it's, you know, within reason, obviously there's always exceptions, but still it's like having that flexibility. I really underestimated how much of an advantage that is.
Right. Well, and dude, if you're a private land guy and you've got that piece and you're listening to Jeff Sturgis and you're like, you know, don't say you can't kill him from the couch. You got to let your property rest. That's fine. Go hunt the public. Mm-hmm. Go get yourself out there and get more experiences. Learn more stuff. Get yourself out there when the deer are up and moving. And if you don't want to pressure your property because, I mean, I do habitat consulting. Like, I get it. Like, I fully understand. But go hunt the public, man. Go where, go somewhere where you feel like you have nothing to lose and get after it because you're going to learn way more than you're going to learn sitting on your property or not sitting on your property or whatever. Right. You know, I think there's a reason Jeff's killed a lot of big deer. The dude knows his stuff. There's no doubt. He has paved the way in the industry that I now call home, you know, as far as professionally. But, and he's killed a lot of good deer on public land over the years. But I think that may be more of a symptom of how and when he's hunting what pieces of public land rather than his public land prowess. When we watch him struggle during public land challenges and stuff that he's done with others, you know, when he went and popped up when I watched him go pop up a pop-up blind on public ground and being like, this is where I'm hunting for the morning. I'm like, dude, there's no way. Like, you lost public land credibility in my eyes, bud. Like, you literally walked out there and you popped up a tent. It ain't happening for you today. And so, yes, listen to Jeff Sturgis on the things that you should listen to Jeff Sturgis on. Good guy. But also understand his situation is not yours.
It's a different style of hunting.
It's a different style of hunting. And the dude, I mean, man, I watched him the other day. He passed a buck at his place that I'm like, man, I'm shooting that all day long. And he's like, it's so cool to just watch these older deer. I'm like, oh my God, it's a 4-year-old. Shoot it. You know, like, what are you doing?
And it is. And, you know, it is perfectly to the tune of those who have a property like that, who can devote the time and the energy and the resources to managing that property for them. That is, I mean, everything he says is gold.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Like it's for private landowners who are grooming their property and all that stuff, designing for this. I mean, he's got a hell of a lot of knowledge on that stuff.
Right.
Great job with it. I don't want to bash him in any way. It was just the,
but
just the whole can't kill him from the couch kind of thing. That was,
but I think he would also say, like, if he heard me saying, yeah, you're right. You probably shouldn't go into your ground today or whatever, but do go out, go get on that piece of public. He'd be like, heck yeah, go do that. Cause that's where he cut his teeth. Like he's done that before. I mean, it's not to say he doesn't have any skill. It's just to say he's separated from that, you know, at this point in his career. But, anyway, well, yeah, man,
you gain so much from hunting both private and public too. You know what I mean? Cause like, I mean, pretty much, I mean, I'll just say it. The strategy that I figured out when I'm going to go tackle a new piece of public is I go, okay, here is my little 5-acre bubble that I grew up hunting on. And I can see all the land around it and all that. And I kind of know how deer use the stuff. I will go out and I'll think, okay, I always see deer on this feature or work through this area, you know, on our private. If I go to public, I look for the exact same feature and then I build around it.
Right.
I go in, that's my first, you know, my absolute go-to. I'll maybe do a set off of that. Otherwise, I get in there and then I figure out, okay, actually, on this property, they're doing this instead. Right. And then you take that knowledge from the public land and you take it back to your private. You go, oh, they're doing the same thing here, actually, but I never looked at it because it was just on private and this is where my stands were.
Right. You know,
The contrast between the two and being able to take lessons from both and mash them together, I think that's so critical.
Yeah. I had my wife, we were talking about buying property and all that. My wife is like, you know, okay, so what if we do buy a piece of ground? Like, does that mean you're only hunting at home? Like, no. I still need room.
Will you hunt
roll.
Less, Josh?
Nope. I will still hunt. I will still travel to Wisconsin or somewhere in the Midwest and hunt there. I will still do all the things. Like, yeah, my hunting will change, but I need that room to roam, man. I got to get out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's something about struggling with creation, like struggling with the earth and letting circumstances kick me in the teeth over and over and over again, and then finding success after that. That's how I want it, man. Like, I want it. Like, not that I'm not going to shoot a good one on the first day. I'd love that too. And then, you know, shoot one and, in Wisconsin on the first day and then head to Illinois. Like, that'd be pretty sweet. But something about the adversity and dealing with the circumstances and the hand that you're dealt is exhilarating to me. And I don't know that I'll ever be over it. You know, we've got good private that we can hunt, and I hunted it one day last year.
Right.
And I didn't shoot anything. It's not that I didn't see anything. I just didn't shoot anything.
And I don't know if it's psychological or not, but there's like a different feel to private versus public land.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. It's almost, I don't want to say that it's, because I hope to one day be able to, you know, acquire some property for myself and all that. But then, like, I sit here and we talk about kind of comparing and contrasting and all that stuff. And it's like, I would almost rather just be able to find some private that I can hunt, or, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have family who owns property that you can hunt out there, but then, you know, jump back and forth between that and public, like, man, there's something almost, not to, I don't want to take any business away from you, but like,
right.
It almost makes me like reconsider like wanting to purchase property and be like, you know, I'm still, you know, that's still a lifetime goal of mine, but like, you know, it makes me want to reconsider like, man, if I do that, then I gotta devote a lot of time to it. And I got to like hunt it. Not that I wouldn't enjoy the process of, you know, designing it for, you know, for hunting and turning it into the best possible, you know, property that it could be. But at the same time, it's like, then I would still feel guilty not trying to run around and like explore something new. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. I've got a guy, I just scheduled a consult with him in February of this year. I'm really, really looking forward to it. It's a 40-acre piece. That is literally a blank slate. Like, we can do anything we want with this spot. And it is in the middle of a national forest.
Really?
The dude has got the setup. It is in the middle, totally surrounded on all four sides by a national forest. And it's his little 40, right? So we're going to make this thing prime as prime can be. It's going to have the best bedding. It's going to have the best food. It's going to have the best possible setups. And on those days that it doesn't set up well, or, you know, because it is a 40, like, there will be days where it's like, hey, it's not your day, bud. Like, this is not a good one. Well, strike out on this giant piece of National Forest ground.
Right.
You know, that's what I want. That's what I want to have one day. So, anyway, all right, Pierce, we got to run, man. Thanks for coming on the show. Looking forward to seeing that kill pick that you take next weekend. Whenever you've got one on the ground with this cold front rolling through.
Hopefully, man. Folks, until then, go out and go check out the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast and listen to our conversation with Sam.
Oh, my gosh. So good.
You will absolutely benefit from it, regardless if you are from Wisconsin or any other corner of the country.
Yeah.
Sam's just a wealth of knowledge and an absolute treat to have on and talk about deer with.
For sure. Yeah. It got me fired up, and it really... It's not specific to Wisconsin. So if you want to hear some good pre-rut content, go check it out this coming Tuesday. It'll be launching 4 a.m. So if you want to be first in line, there you go, 4:01, you can download it. So, all right, Pierce, have a good one.
Thanks.
That's all for this week's episode. As always, thank you so much for tuning in.
If you dig this show, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you get your podcasts. If you could leave us a 5-star review, I would very much appreciate that. While you're at it, you can follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram at @howtohuntdeer. That's also the best way to get a hold of me, suggest topics that you want to hear, guests you want to hear from, or questions that you'd like me to explore on the show. Big thanks to our partners Tacticam, Huntworth, and OnX. Please go support the brands that support this show and help me bring you great content each and every week. If you're looking for more outdoor content, check out thesportsmansempire.com where you're going to find my other podcast, The Wisconsin Sportsman, as well as a ton of other awesome outdoor podcasts.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.